Headlines: Russia says its military hit all the targets in an overnight missile strike on Ukraine after Kiev announced it downed nearly 20 Russian missiles. Israeli forces conduct a new raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank, arresting one Palestinian man and injuring three others. And new official data shows unemployment rate in the UK rose in the first 3 months of this year amid a deepening cost of living crisis. Hello and welcome. You've tuned into World News, coming to you from our international headquarters right here in Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to the situation with the war in Ukraine and Russia. Russia says it has hit all the intended targets during its latest overnight strikes on Ukraine.
Last night, the armed forces of the Russian Federation launched a concentrated strike with high-precision long-range air and sea-based weapons at the locations of Ukraine's army units, as well as the storage sites for ammunition, weapons, and military equipment supplied by Western countries. The target of the strike has been achieved. All assigned targets have been hit.
The spokesman said Russian Kinzhal hypersonic missiles also destroyed a U.S. Patriot defense system stationed in Ukraine. Earlier, Ukraine said it shot down 18 Russian missiles, claiming that six of them were hypersonic ones. A Ukrainian military official called Moscow's latest assault exceptional in terms of density. The airstrikes hit the capital Kiev and surrounding cities. Meanwhile, Russia says it sees no encouraging prospects for extending the Black Sea grain deal right now. An unidentified source has told Russian media that talks will continue to ensure the resumption of the mechanism. However, the source said it is hard to predict what will happen in the coming days. UN Aid Chief Martin Griffiths has called the initiative critically important, saying that efforts are underway to extend it. Well, the deal, which is due to expire on May the 18th, allows Ukraine to export its grain through the Black Sea amid the war with Russia. Moscow says it wants Western sanctions against it eased before the deal is extended. It argues that the restrictions have hindered its exports of food and fertilizer. Israeli forces have carried out fresh violent raids on a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Regime's forces stormed the camp in the city of Jenin and detained a Palestinian, claiming he had collaborated with resistance fighters. At least three Palestinians were also injured in the attack. The refugee camp has often been targeted under different pretexts. It is home to more than 22,000 Palestinians who were expelled from their ancestral homes by the regime in 1948. Israel has stepped up its attacks on the occupied Palestinian towns and cities, killing nearly 120 Palestinians so far this year. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, earlier joined us to give us more details on the latest Israeli raid on Jenin.
The clashes unfortunately led to the injury of three Palestinians. One of them is in serious condition, according to Palestinian paramedics, where the Israeli forces used live fire, of course, against the Palestinians there. The Israelis arrested one Palestinian. They claim that he's responsible for a series of shootings that took place in the last few weeks against Israeli forces and settlers in areas around Jenin. Also, this morning, Israeli forces raided the refugee camp of Aqbat Jaber near Ariha in the Jordan Valley. Clashes erupted between Palestinians and Israeli forces. At least seven Palestinians were detained by the Israeli soldiers from Aqbat Jaber. Palestinian prisoners groups issued a statement saying that at least 25 Palestinians had been arrested by the Israeli forces only this morning in several areas, including Jenin, Aqbat Jaber refugee camp in Ramallah, Nablus, and Bethlehem as well.
The five-day Israeli aggression on Gaza has finally come to an end. Dozens of people, including women and children, were killed during the recent Israeli onslaught on the besieged coastal territory. Yet the international community has failed to take any concrete measures against the Israeli regime for its atrocities against Palestinians.
Gaza Strip, and yet again, another Israeli deadly aggression on the blockaded territory that finally ended following an Egypt-brokered truce on Saturday. The five-day onslaught claimed the lives of over 30 people, including women and children. The Palestinian fatalities included several Islamic Jihad commanders. Khalil al-Bahtini, the commander of the Al-Quds Brigades in the northern Gaza Strip, Tariq Azzeddin, a spokesperson for the Islamic Jihad, who also managed retaliatory operations in the West Bank and Gaza, and Jihad al-Ghannam, secretary of the movement's military council, were all among those assassinated along with their families. A total of 51 Palestinian houses were completely destroyed, while about 1,000 others were damaged, prompting many people across Gaza to become homeless.
Now we are homeless, so we have no choice but to sleep on the street. Everything of us is ruined. I am worried about my children and other family members.
I demand compensation following this ceasefire because we are living on the streets now, no house or anything. My children and their children have no home. We are all left with nothing.
The conflict marked the worst episode of fighting between Gaza's resistance factions and the Israeli regime since the 10-day war in 2021. The carnage was to the extent which drew reaction from the United Nations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the Israeli regime's onslaught on Gaza as unacceptable. The UN chief also called on the Israeli regime to immediately stop the bloodshed. Guterres said Israel must abide by its obligations under international humanitarian law, including proportionate use of force and taking all feasible precautions to spare civilians and civilian objects in the conduct of military operations. The UN chief also censured the Israeli closure of Gaza border crossings, which prevented the entry of foodstuff, medical supplies, and fuel into the besieged coastal territory.
During the past several years, Palestinian resistance groups have managed to enhance their military capabilities in the face of Israeli adventurism. The latest aggression and the assassination of resistance commanders not only has increased the resolve of Palestinian resistance against an occupying regime, but has also united all factions in their struggle to liberate Palestine.
The latest Israeli aggression on Gaza brings to the spotlight the power and strength the Palestinian resistance groups have attained during the past several years. A joint statement by resistance factions in Gaza is a testimony to that. The statement said their retaliatory rocket attacks and a steadfastness of resistance fighters messed up the regime's calculations during the recent onslaught on Gaza. It added a new round of fighting with the occupying Israeli regime further strengthened the resistance front. The Zionist enemy mistakenly believed that the time was ripe for assassination of Palestinian resistance leaders, but it was a grave miscalculation. The umbrella group said that Israeli military officials had planned to wrap up the latest onslaught on the Gaza Strip in a very short span of time, but were stunned by the scope of resistance fighters' preparedness and rapid response to air raids. The groups warned Israel against the implementation of the policy of targeted killings, adding that resistance fighters have their fingers on the trigger and will not hesitate to respond in case the regime in Tel Aviv resorts to assassinations. But with Israeli officials admitting that the Islamic Jihad fired 6,000 rockets toward the occupied territories, it seems that the power of Palestinian resistance has already done the job, creating fear and threat among Israeli authorities. With all the fuss about the Israeli Iron Dome, numerous Palestinian rockets managed to intrude into the airspace of the occupied territories and inflict their stated losses. The death of an Israeli settler as a result of those rocket fires during the recent conflict was an indication of that. What seems to be of very high significance is that assassinating Palestinian commanders will not bring security to the Israeli regime and instead will enhance the extent of resistance on the part of Palestinian factions and increase their resolve in the face of the Israeli atrocities. That not only will cost Israel a heavy price in case of any gross miscalculations, as resistance leaders have put it, but will undoubtedly challenge the existence of an occupying regime.
In the UK, new data shows an increase in the number of unemployed seeking jobs as Britons are grappling with a painful cost of living crisis. According to the Office for National Statistics, the unemployment rate rose to 3.9% in the first 3 months of 2023. The British economy also witnessed a drop in total payrolled employees between March and April. Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt has expressed worries about difficulties in recruiting employees, as well as soaring prices that many people are dealing with. UK economic woes go beyond the problems revolving around the labor force. Now, the value of the British pound against the US dollar has fallen by about 50 basis points to nearly 1.5%. For months, the UK has been reeling from a double-digit inflation and a series of walkouts over pay and working conditions. Saeed Pourreza joined us a short while ago with his take on the high unemployment rate in the UK.
A couple of reasons why this is happening. One is different age groups not seeking jobs. For example, the 16 to 25-year-old age group are practically students who are not seeking jobs, or also early retirement, people who have retired and when asked if they would want to go back to work, their answer was no. And a number of other reasons, of course, but all of that could be collectively blamed on inflation, as you said earlier. And what has caused inflation here? The cost of living crisis, of course, you know, just a few months ago, The reason was blamed on the wholesale energy price hikes internationally ensuing the Russo-Ukraine war, but then energy prices have stabilized, but inflation in the UK is still in the double digits, above 10%. We've seen, of course, it go above 11% at one point. And then the increase in savings, people not spending, then preferring to save their money because of the increase in the interest rates by the Bank of England. There is also other reasons, like the shift from spending on goods and products to experiences.
Well, the EU's spring 2023 economic forecast predicts subdued growth across the 27-country bloc, but suggests that there are mounting risks to financial well-being. The ongoing conflict in Ukraine has again been signaled out as a particular concern. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Industrial production in the EU's top economy, Germany, has suffered an unexpected decline. It's bad news for the entire bloc. However, a forecast published on Monday suggests the EU's economy is set to grow modestly. But downside risks are also growing.
Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine continues to cast a long shadow of uncertainty over the economy.
Grants to help struggling EU firms will soon be withdrawn, Eurozone finance ministers announced on Monday.
Companies that are receiving support will have to look at how they can support their own long-term viability.
A growing number of people are reaching the conclusion that the West could have prevented the war in Ukraine through constructive dialogue with Russia. The cost of living crisis resulting from the conflict is taking its toll.
It's time to be talking about peace, not about weapons or providing more financial aid to the war.
If the parties could come together and agree a peace, that would be wonderful, but you know, I'm not sure that's happening, right?
Apparently, financial markets are looking on nervously because so many things have been impacted by the war.
Due to the fact also of the uncertainties in China and lower exports and imports from China, and also due to the expectations of the economy in the United States.
A conference in Brussels on Monday heard that cracks are showing in the EU with respect to the war in Ukraine.
The Europeans have been united, but they need to be much more united.
Trade union members across the EU point out that wages are not keeping up with inflation as the bloc continues to spend billions of euro on arming Ukraine. Therefore, they suggest the onus is now on Western leaders to bring about de-escalation as a matter of urgency. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Now to Sudan, where fighting continues between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces despite the ongoing ceasefire talks between the two sides and Saudi Arabia. Heavy bombardments have been heard in the south of the capital, Khartoum, and in neighboring cities of Omdurman and Bahri. Recently, deadly violence also broke out in the western region of Darfur. Residents and human rights groups are warning that the situation could turn catastrophic there. The unrest gripped the African nation in mid-April over the paramilitary group's proposed integration into the army. 1 month into the conflict, nearly 700 people have been killed and thousands wounded. Thousands of Sudanese have also fled the country, while tens of thousands have been displaced internally. The warring factions are currently holding talks in Saudi Arabia to secure a lengthy ceasefire that would allow humanitarian access to conflict areas. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight.
In Britain, travellers faced the second day of disruption on Britain's railways on Saturday, 13th of May, as the union leader Mick Lynch insisted the 24-hour strike had not targeted the Eurovision Song Contest. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Passengers faced a second day of disruption on Britain's railways on Saturday as the union leader Mick Lynch insisted the 24-hour strike had not targeted the Eurovision Song Contest. Train crews are staging another 24-hour strike immediately after Friday's action by drivers, disrupting people travelling to Liverpool for the Eurovision final, as well as National League football fans heading to Wembley in North London. The RMT Union's General Secretary Mick Lynch said the timing of the latest action was because of anti-trade union laws rather than targeting specific dates. "We've not targeted Wembley or Liverpool or any of the activities that people get up to," he said in an interview with BBC. "There isn't a day where people aren't undertaking important activities in business life or personal life. We don't set the date for Eurovision. We don't set the anti-trade union laws that require us to have a mandate that expires after 6 months. Today is the last day under the anti-union laws that we can have a strike under the mandate. You get 6 months to run action. After that 6 months, you cannot take any more action. Today is the last Saturday of our previous mandate." Mick Lynch added, "We give 2 weeks' notice under the law, which is what the government requires us. But if we didn't take strike action today, we wouldn't have been able to take any more during that mandate. So that's down to the anti-trade union laws." Ministers again urge unions to put sub-inflation pay offers to their members, but the Labour Party said the government had guaranteed a weekend of chaos by refusing to hold talks with the unions. More trains will run than on Friday, 12th of May, but most networks will have a very limited service as RMT members at 14 train operating companies in England strike. A large number of smaller stations from the north to the southeast will close, while in many places trains will stop running by 7 p.m. Merseyrail, which is not affected by strikes, is running services, but intercity trains will terminate earlier. In Wales and Scotland, where unions are not in dispute, only cross-border services will be affected. While Saturday was the last remaining date legally allowed under their existing mandate, RMT members have now voted to keep striking for another 6 months if necessary. Mick Whelan, the General Secretary of the ASLEF Union, said on Friday he had been unaware that Eurovision would be affected by strikes, but added, "If somebody can name me a day where there's not an event that isn't going to get a hit at some point, if there's any form of disruption, I'd love to know." The Rail Minister, Hugh Merriman, again urged the RMT Union and ASLEF leadership to put the pay offers to a full vote, but unions have accused the government of hampering a deal. Mick Whelan said they had neither had hide nor hair from the government that are meant to be facilitating and aiding these talks since a meeting with Hugh Merriman on 6th of January. The Transport Secretary, Mark Harper, has not met unions this year. Lynch said earlier this week that the government had tied the hands of the railway companies and prevented them from offering a fair deal. The Rail Delivery Group, representing train operators, has said it was blindsided by the RMT union rejecting its last offer, which it claimed had been agreed by both sides in the negotiating room. The Shadow Transport Secretary, Louise Hague, said it was staggering that complacent ministers haven't held any talks to avert this disruptive strike action. The Conservatives' irresponsible approach is guaranteeing a weekend of chaos, and it's the public which will have to pay the price. Trains will also be disrupted over the next week, the industry has said, owing to an overtime ban brought in across 15 operating companies by ASLEF from 15 to 20th of May inclusive. Rail firms have said it could mean more cancellations and delays and could particularly affect passengers travelling in and out of London. Two further strikes are planned by train drivers on 31st of May and 3rd of June, the date of the FA Cup final. Press Association PA Media has also covered this story and tells us more. Rail passengers will suffer fresh travel chaos on Saturday, 13th of May, because of another strike amid an escalation of long-running disputes over pay. Members of the Rail Maritime and Transport Union, RMT Union, will walk out at 14 train operators across England on the day of the Eurovision Song Contest final in Liverpool. The strike follows action on Friday, 12th of May, by train drivers in the Aslef Union, which crippled services with some parts of England having no trains all day. Aslef's General Secretary Mick Whelan revealed there had been no meetings with the government since early January, despite continuing deadlock over the pay row. He told the Press Association news agency that drivers were prepared to continue taking industrial action until they had a decent pay offer. Aslef has described an offer of an 8% wage rise over 2 years as risible. Mick Whelan, who joined picket lines in Manchester and Liverpool, said the government seems to think they can starve us back to work or that we will give up, but that isn't going to happen. We're in this for the long haul and there will be more strikes. Aslef has called further stoppages on 31st of May and 3rd of June, the day of the FA Cup final at Wembley. The Rail Delivery Group, the RDG, said that after many weeks of negotiations with the Aslef leadership, it had made a revised and fair offer, including a pay rise of 8% over 2 years. It would have introduced overdue common sense improvements already in place in parts of the network, which would see more trains running on time for passengers. Sadly, this has been rejected, said a spokesperson. Passengers were urged to check before they travel on Saturday, 13th of May. Merseyrail is not affected by the industrial action and is expected to run a normal service during the Eurovision Song Contest. The RMT's General Secretary Mick Lynch said he expected solid support for Saturday's walkout. He said the strike takes place in the wake of a recent re-ballot of members working for 14 train operating companies, which massively reaffirmed a mandate for further industrial action. Throughout this dispute, the government has tied the hands of the railway companies and prevented them offering a fairer deal. We are striking so that the employers and government can see the huge anger amongst rail workers is very real, and they need to recognise that fact, face reality, and make improved proposals. We're calling for the rail companies to get around the table with RMT Union and negotiate in good faith for a better deal for rail workers. The RMT pointed out that when it re-balloted its members recently, there was a massive vote to continue taking strike action. Saturday, 13th of May, was chosen for a strike as it was the last date allowed under employment laws, said the RMT Union. There will be more train services on Saturday than on Friday, 12th of May, but many companies are restricting their number of routes and hours of operation.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
Jannah,
الناس والجنة علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وصي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. In the first sermon, when Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about some of the duties of the messengers and prophets, he says, وَيُثِيرُ لَهُمْ دَفَائِنَ الْعُقُولِ, that the messengers and the prophets, their duty is to extract, excavate, bring forth the hidden, buried intellects of the people. And we discussed at length previously that, for example, the Holy Prophet ﷺ and the Qur'an, they encourage people to think in ways that would be truly beneficial for their progress as human beings. And we give various examples about that. Today also is the day or the night of the martyrdom of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth holy Imam, who was one of the forerunners in the intellectual progress of the Muslim society in general. He was one of the first, or rather the first, the first former of a university, of an Islamic university. He had around 3,000 to 4,000 students, where he used to teach various different subjects, which included also mathematics and all of these other subjects that we have, scientific and non-scientific. Inshallah, that's another discussion that we can deal with later, inshallah.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, when it comes to Islam and how it encouraged intellectual progress, this is something that, you know, we cannot deny. When the European countries were in the dark ages, whereby they would not even bath for ages, like you could say months would pass and, for example, they didn't have public baths where they could bath, where this idea of hygiene, the idea of scientific research was not there. Muslims were the beacons of science and technology of the world at that time. They are the ones that brought about change in different parts of the world. What happened after that is a story of regret, that what happened to the Muslims after that. But of course, that was not just a thing that the Muslims wanted, but it was the result also of a lot of suppression and oppression that happened, and a lot of stealing that occurred in the later ages. And then, of course, the disunity amongst the Muslims that led to their downfall and the destruction of their empire and things like that. There were many internal factors that led to the destruction of the Muslim authority. But all in all, the actual idea of scientific research and progress is a prophetic idea that was been, that had been inspired from teachings of Islam. We cannot deny the role of people like Bu Ali Sina, Ibn Sina as they call him, or for example the role of Khwarizmi, the role of Khayyam, the role of all of these different Muslim scholars and scientists that led to the progress of scientific research in different parts of the world. In fact, even today, some of those books are being referred to. When you look at the progress in terms of philosophy and logic, Aristotelian logic was basically very, very, you can say, very, very in its very primitive forms at that time when Islam came and wrote and expanded that form of logic that today we have got books and books by Muslim scholars that have explained Aristotelian logic, or when it comes to philosophy. You see how much progress the Muslim scholars have done in Islamic philosophy. So this is something that the Muslim scholars and Muslim academia, Islamic academia, encouraged so that people become stronger in their thinking and in their worship of God.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, the idea, of course, of Islam being an encouraging force for scientific progress and for intellectual reasoning is something that is not hidden from anyone. Everyone knows this. But then, what is also more important for us to realize is that this type of encouragement was actually something that the Prophet ﷺ actively pursued. He actively encouraged people to learn. He even told them to go up till China to do research. He used to encourage them to think about the creation of the universe. And he used to stop and not allow superstitious thoughts to encroach into the minds of the people. If you, for example, look at a time when one of the children of the Holy Prophet ﷺ, if I'm not mistaken, Ibrahim, had died, at that time, when the Holy Prophet ﷺ buried Ibrahim, there was a solar eclipse. And then the people started to say that, look, because of this, because of the death of Ibrahim, the son of the Prophet ﷺ, the sky and the heavens are weeping and there's a solar eclipse. Now, if the Holy Prophet ﷺ was just a false leader, and was not a divine leader, he would have encouraged that and said, yes, see, the sky is weeping because of me. But the Prophet stopped that immediately because he was an enemy of superstitions. He said that, no, the skies have their own system, and this earth and we as human beings have our own system. When we become sad, we cry. The reason why solar eclipse and lunar eclipse happens is because of a system that exists in the universe. And therefore, these two should not be interlinked and connected. See how the Prophet ﷺ actively encouraged people to think and discouraged superstitious thought that would cover their intellects. This is Islam. And this is what prophetic movements are propagating. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
Shadda in the مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Thanks to the resolve and resistance of the Palestinians, who over the past few days offered martyrs and shattered the myth of military mighty of the Zionists, the end of Israel is near, and in the near future, the spurious, terroristic, and racist regime of Israel will cease to exist, no matter what military and monetary help the Americans and the Europeans provide. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International noted, May 15th, the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, or a great catastrophe that saw the expulsion of some million Palestinians from their homes and hearts, a day after Britain gave birth to the illegitimate Zionist entity, has brought into sharper focus the fast approaching end of Israel. May 15th is the Black Day in history, which depicts the story of a nation deprived of its homeland, on which the occupiers who came from across the seas set up a spurious state in 1948 and have since subjected the sons of the soil to all sorts of atrocities. The five-day unprovoked aerial attacks on Gaza that the usurper regime was forced to end recently because of the barrage of missiles of the defenders piercing the so-called Iron Dome and causing panic among the illegal settlers, once again busted the myth of Israel's military superiority. It also exposed as lies the remarks of certain European backers of the Zionists that Israel has made the desert bloom and the Palestinians lack the capability, knowledge, or desire to develop agriculture in the region. This is indeed a preposterous lie and a convenient disguise by the Israeli regime to degrade and destroy Palestine's natural resources and a means of obfuscating one of the worst occupations in modern history by wrapping it in the cloak of Zionist mythology. Facts speak otherwise. Historical documents prove that prior to 1948, Palestinian farms were very productive, and the local Arabs, both Muslims and Christians, were successful farmers. For example, a UN report on agriculture in Palestine between 1945 and 1946 records that Palestinian-grown crops accounted for nearly 80% of Palestine's total agricultural yield that season, with Palestinian farms producing over 244,000 tons of vegetables, 73,000 tons of fruit, and 78,000 tons of olives. 2 years later, in 1948, when the majority of Palestinians were forced to flee from their homeland during the Nakba, the farms and orchards tended by them were left abandoned as their owners fled under the threat of death at the hands of Zionist militias. The Zionists actually began harvesting the crops that had ripened in the abandoned fields and picking the citrus fruit in Arab groves in what could be called land theft and proves the lie of the so-called agricultural expertise of Zionist occupiers. The current Zionist policy, especially the construction of illegal Jewish settlements on Palestinian land, is the continuation of this effort to erase Palestinian territory. The result has been the current horrendous drought, the worst the region has faced in over 900 years, and is among the reasons of the continuing protests by hundreds of thousands of illegal Jewish settlers who have begun to realize that they were deceived. This means the fabricated regime of Israel has not improved the land by making the desert bloom as alleged, but instead degraded the land where its native inhabitants, the Palestinians, were better caretakers. Anyway, thanks to the resolve and resistance of the Palestinians who over the past few days offered martyrs and shattered the myth of military might of the Zionists, the end of the fabricated regime of Israel is near, and in the near future, the spurious regime of Israel will cease to exist, no matter what military and monetary help the Americans and the Europeans provide. In the meantime, the website of Middle East Eye reported thousands of people marched in London recently commemorating the 75th anniversary of the Nakba, or catastrophe, which refers to the mass forced expulsion of Palestinians by Zionist militias to make way for the creation of Israel in 1948. The demonstration titled Nakba 75, End Apartheid, End the Occupation, gathered in the heart of London outside the BBC headquarters before participants made their way to Downing Street, where the office of the British Prime Minister is located. Lynn Muhammad, a British Palestinian activist attending the rally, told the Middle East Eye, "The Nakba was not just a singular event. Today we are still living the effect of the Nakba. 75 years ago, my family was expelled from their home in Haifa, Palestine, by Zionist militias. They ended up as refugees in Lebanon. Three quarters of a century later, they are still living in that same refugee camp." The London event was organized by the Palestinian Forum in Britain, Friends of Al-Aqsa, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, PSC, and the Muslim Association of Britain. "We mark the Nakba not just as a historical event, but as a continuing process of oppression enacted over the past 75 years through ongoing colonization of land, enforcement of apartheid and military occupation," said PSC on its website. The march was attended by the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who has been a lifeline campaigner against the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Corbyn, in a message on Twitter, said, "Today we marched through London to mark the 75th anniversary of Nakba and speak out against the ongoing dispossession of the Palestinian people. End the occupation. Free Palestine."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been transmitted from Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. And this hadith is about Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, his son. As you know, today marks the anniversary of the death and martyrdom of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, here at IRIB English Radio and Hadith of the Day, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed and respected listeners and audience on this most solemn and sad day. Many hadiths have been transmitted regarding the virtues of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. One of them is the following hadith. Muhammad ibn Muslim, famous companion of Imam Baqir and Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he narrates that I was in the presence of Abu Ja'far, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir. He was in the presence of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. When his son Ja'far alayhi salam entered, he had a forelock on his head and a stick in his hand with which he was playing with. Imam Baqir alayhi salam took him in his arms and hugged him tightly, then said, "May my parents be your ransom. You are neither distracted nor do you play." He then addressed me and said, "O Muhammad, this is your Imam after me. So follow him and benefit from his knowledge. By Allah, he is the truthful one whom the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam described to us. Certainly his followers will be victorious in this world and in the hereafter." And in connection with his noble character, Muhammad ibn Ziyad al-Azudi narrates the following. He says, "I heard Malik ibn Anas, the jurist of Medina, say, 'I used to go visit Ja'far ibn Muhammad as-Sadiq alayhi salam, and he would place a cushion for me, respect me, and say, Malik, I indeed like you. I would be pleased with this comment and would praise Allah for it.'" Malik continued, "He was a man always disposed to one of three states. Either he was fasting, or praying, or engaged in Allah's remembrance. He was amongst the greatest worshippers, the greatest of abstemious people who fear Allah. He narrated many prophetic traditions, was sociable and friendly to sit with, and had much for us to benefit from." This is some of the virtues and noble characteristics of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues and the noble characteristics of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in the words of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. 75 years since 750,000 Palestinians were driven out of their country, and at least 15,000 Palestinians had been killed by 1949. The excuse of giving a land without people to a people without land was Zionist and Western propaganda from the very beginning, as this land had been populated by Palestinians.